listening to the Rainmaking Podcast. Hosted by high-stakes headhunter, author, and professional speaker, Scott Love.
We're listening to the Rainmaking Podcast, and my name is Scott Love. Thanks for joining me on the show. I'm really excited about our guest today because I've been following her for years, and her content is solid. And I reached out to her, and she agreed to be on the show, and I'm really excited about this. And her name is Deborah Farrar. And our topic title for today is Best Practices in Law Firm Business Development and Marketing. And that's also the name of her most recent book. Now, if you're not in the legal industry, if you're not an attorney, you still need to listen to this show because the concepts are absolutely malleable, especially if you're selling professional services. I'm really excited about some of the things that she shares with us. And I'm very proud of this podcast because I get a lot of feedback from you. And thank you so much for sharing that. Because my goal is to help you and not to waste your time, to give you ideas right out of the gate so you don't have to waste your time looking at your watch, wondering when you're going to get something out of it, is to get that to you right away. And if you get a moment, if you could go to Apple Podcasts, formerly known as iTunes, and give our show a nice 5-star review, I'd really appreciate that. It helps us get better rankings. And if there's anything that one of our guests has said that's made a difference for you, please mention that person by name. As always, this show is sponsored by Leopard Solutions' Legal Intelligence suite of products, Firmscape, and Leopard BI. Push ahead of the pack with the power of Leopard. And now, here's my conversation with Deborah Farrar.
Hey, this is Scott Love with the Rainmaking Podcast. Our special guest today is Deborah Farrar, and our topic title is Best Practices in Law Firm Business Development and Marketing. Deborah, I'm excited about having you on the show. Thanks for joining me today.
Scott, I'm thrilled to be here with you.
Yeah, this is great. I've been following you for a while, and I've read some of the things that you posted on the web. I've heard podcasts where you've been a guest, and I'm like, I've got to meet this person. I've got to get her on the show because you've lived it, you've done it, and you've got ideas that can help people in business development to really overcome certain pitfalls and danger areas in terms of marketing and business development. So let's kind of start with that. What do you think are some of the main pitfalls, the main problem areas that law firms go wrong in terms of marketing and business development?
Well, Scott, it's great to be here. And there are three areas that I see time and time again, over and over. I think the first is that there's an assumption that all partners are able to develop business, that when a partner is named partner and given that title, that they have sprung from the head of Zeus fully formed and they know how to go out and develop business. Very often they don't. Maybe they've had role models or not. Maybe they've been trained or not. But I think it does take time and it takes effort and people learn differently, which is the second point. I think all people learn differently as far as developing those skills. Again, some are looking at role models. Others are trying to read about it. Others like videos, but people adapt and learn that information differently. And I think the third area where they go wrong, which I'm sure you've seen too, is that they jump right into tactics without really having a plan.
Yeah, and that's right.
I see that at the strategy level, at the firm level, the practice group level, and also in my work with individuals when I coach them. Very often they jump right into those tactics before thinking about what their strategy is.
That's right. That's right. And let me ask you about one of those that you mentioned. And I know that you talk about this in your book, which is a fantastic book. And it's truly an enjoyable read, by the way, is you talk about role models and you give some really good examples. And one thing that I learned from this, and I don't remember who it was, he was a successful rainmaker that mentored a lot of his younger attorneys to, when you get to know the client, don't just get to know the chief counsel, get to know all the attorneys, all the other people there, because some of them, they get promoted and they remember you. And what are some of the things that you've seen that really work in law firms related to role models?
Well, I think there is an issue with women and minorities not necessarily having enough role models because we're still behind as far as partnership and management levels. But I have seen partners, there are so many that I've worked with that are very good about bringing in the more junior lawyers, whether it's to a pitch, whether it's putting things in context for them. Evan Chesler at Cravath was one of the best at doing this. He was always thinking about that next generation and how to involve them. But I think contextualizing things, really letting those lawyers know why you're going on the pitch, how this would fit in with the client base, what the personalities are, and of course, what the legal issues are. Those things are so important in a role model.
Yeah, that's great. That's good. And I appreciate those stories. I felt that was really helpful to kind of get that insight that you have and to see how law firms work that way. And I also like the fact that you drill it down into all the different variables that go into getting business in today's world related to RFPs and RFIs and all that. But at its core, there has to be good business development and even business development training going on within firms. So tell me this then, in terms of best practices, Deborah, in terms of business development training sessions, what do you think makes a good business development training session within a firm?
Well, I think the first thing, as with any project, is really knowing what it is that you're trying to do, so that if you have a strategy of trying to get associates to build networks, then that's a different strategy than trying to get partners to actually develop business and go out and pitch. So I think being really crystal clear upfront about what the objectives are is just so vital to really developing any type of program, whether it's a training program, whether it's a partnership retreat. And so I think that's vital. And then I think also using different modalities of training. So the best training that I've been in has involved case histories. Very often, someone might listen to this podcast, they'll remember my talking about Evan Chesler at Cravath, because that's a mini case history.
Right.
Using case histories, talking about how different people in the firm have developed business. That's so important because lawyers learn by precedent and they like precedent. So you want to bring in those case histories. But there are lots of interesting things that you can do in training to make sure that the information really is hitting home and hopefully retained.
That's great. Do you think this is something that should be regularly scheduled or ad hoc? What have you seen works best within firms?
I love that question, Scott. I think training should be a lifelong process, quite frankly. I am probably not at the age where people think of me as a TikToker, and I don't go on necessarily and perform, but I get a lot of information from the influencers on TikTok, and yeah. I get a lot of information from people on Instagram and YouTube who are doing shows that are really, really enriching and helpful. And I think the same thing is true with training people how to market. I think younger, probably shouldn't even say younger, but newer minted partners mm-hmm. are going to need training, but so are senior partners. You know, a senior partner needs to keep up to date on different marketing techniques. They need to be on LinkedIn if they want to be reaching general counsel. They need to be giving speaking engagements. And so I really think training just needs to change to reflect that level of professionalism and level of expertise that someone has already mastered.
Yeah, that's right. And do you think that should be owned by a practice group leader or a high-level staff person in the firm? Who do you think really should be responsible for doing that, delivering it, and all that within a firm?
Well, there are firms now that have chief talent officers, which I right. think is a fantastic addition to the law firm landscape. And I know that those people have been in the investment banks for quite some time. But I think that's a role, whether you have that role or you assign it to someone, I think it should be the responsibility of the individual lawyer to make sure that they're getting that training. And if they're not, kind of go outside and hire a coach or get involved in making sure that they know the right people who can teach them. But I think it should be a firm-wide effort.
Yeah.
I don't think it should be delegated out to the practices. I think the practices should be interested in it and should be, you know, pushing it. But I think it should be everyone in the firm that's really looking at training. It should be part of the firm's culture and yeah. part of the firm's lifeblood.
Do you think some people in firms are against this idea? Like, well, it's just, you know, we've never done it that way, or we're such and such firm, we don't need to market. What have you seen in that regard, Deborah?
Absolutely. I think there are certain firms that say, you know, we make widgets. That's all we do is make widgets. Our clients love us. We have a couple of key rainmakers and we're going to keep it that way. Mm-hmm. And I think that's very short-sighted. And I don't think that's going to work in the future. I think those firms are really behind the eight ball because all of us who are in professional services, even if we don't call ourselves sellers and we're not out there as salespeople, we are constantly in touch with our clients and client service is vital. So do you say that I'm not going to teach someone how to be better at client service?
Yeah, right. Yeah. And so one thing you mentioned, you talked about building a network. And tell me about your best practice with that, because I see that with business development, there's so many different strategies. Let's talk about that strategy for a little bit. What is it that someone can do to build that network? How can they make it an effective use of time to know that they're getting a return for that time, and rather than just building a network just to meet people, but without any clear goal?
Right. It's a great question. And if I had the answer to that for everyone, it would be wonderful. But I think the basics are, think about where it is that you want to go, build a network that's going to help you. But by all means, make sure that your network is diverse and that you include people who you think are interesting. And don't look at it as a favor bank. Don't look at it as, well, if I do a favor for this person, they're going to do a favor back for me. Yeah, they may, but they may not. So I think you want to think about who it is that you want to get to know, what circles of influence. And that's something I do when I coach people. You look at who really matters within a certain industry. So if it's investment banking work that you want, it might not be the GCs that are handing out the assignments. Mm-hmm. It might be the bankers that are making those decisions. So you need to really think deeply, who are the personas that you want to reach, and to try to reach them. And today we have more tools than ever. You know, if you're interested in getting to know someone, you can invite them to be on a panel with you, or you can send them a note on LinkedIn, or you can, you know, connect with them at an industry meeting. There are just so many ways of reaching people now. And then I think once you have a network, you need to cultivate it. You need to think about, have I been in touch with those key people who are important to me? What am I doing to help them? Yeah. And again, don't look at it as a transaction. Look at it as, you know, doing good deeds that will hopefully come back to help you in the long run.
So what if you don't see anything? What if you've built your network and you haven't made it a favor bank? And I like that. That's a really good way to describe that. And you can't, someone says, well, you're doing all this work. You're spending all this time. Tell me, how many matters have you gotten out of your network? And you're kind of scratching your head saying, I just don't know if I'm doing it the right way. What do you think about people that they just haven't seen results? What should they think about in terms of their network?
There could be a lot of different reasons why people haven't seen results. You know, I think to market, you need a couple of ingredients. You need to have a practice where you're doing something of great value that really makes sense in the marketplace. But you also need to have a market that needs that service. And then that in-between part, you have to connect with them. You have to find a way to market. So very often people are concerned about asking for the business,
right?
You know, and they are very concerned with, well, I don't want to sound sleazy. And again, I'm not a salesperson. This isn't why I went to law school, or this isn't why I'm an accountant or a law firm consultant. But you need to get comfortable with letting people know that you want to help them. That's how I look at it. And people will find their own language to be able to suggest that they help people, whether it's by asking them for a small assignment, whether it's saying, I can introduce you to someone of value. But I think we all need to get used to asking for that. And that may mean practicing with a colleague. That may mean practicing in front of a mirror. But I think we all need to get good at saying to people, I want to help you, or I want to work with you.
Yeah, that's great. I like that. So let me ask you this then, Deborah, kind of talking more about this, building this network, and some things that I've done in my business, I try to look at, I want to create alliances, so to speak, with people where we're targeting the same people, but for different motivations. Perhaps this is a vendor. This is maybe a management consultant, or somebody that also speaks to the legal industry, but isn't a competitor. So we can share referrals and things like that. Should we take it to the level that we're building certain personas on the different networking partners? What do you think about that?
That's brilliant. I think it's a great way of thinking about things. I would think about who are the people who are servicing the clients that you want, but also I would look at it as, these are people that you can learn from. So for instance, I'm friendly with people in the discovery area. I'm friendly with various recruiters. I'm friendly with third-party alternative service providers. And I look at it as, yes, part of that is my research, but part of it is, I really want to know what they're doing. Like, I am fascinated by what they do.
Yeah.
And so part of that is learning, but you do find opportunities through those alliances of helping one another, or again, inviting one another on a pitch or a panel. Or what I find very important is if I'm going to recommend a third party to a client, I want to make sure that they're the very best third party for them. So I want to know those people that can also help my clients.
Yeah, right. That's great. Those are good points. So let me kind of take it in a different direction, kind of back to the training, but things that go on at law firm retreats. I know you've been involved in a lot of those. Let's say somebody is thinking about their law firm retreat and how can we help our attorneys get better at rainmaking, at client development, really at selling work. What should be, I guess, what's the difference between a successful retreat talk versus one that's just okay? What do you think about that?
I think that's such an important question because I think firms do spend a lot of money on hiring people to come in, you know, whether it's $15,000 or $25,000 or more. I've heard of firms, you know, paying up to $1 million or considering paying up to $1 million for speakers. So I think the most important thing for me, what I see is that you need to make sure that that person who is speaking really knows your firm, has spent time talking with individuals at the firm, knows what the message should be, is able to impart whatever proprietary area that they're involved with, but they should really spend time in advance getting to know the firm. And, you know, that should be part of the initial contract that the firm signs with them. I think that's vital. And I think the second thing is to really know what the mission of the firm is and what they're dealing with. And that ties in, and maybe it's a postulate to point A that I just mentioned, but I think they have to know what the CMO wants to achieve and what the firm leadership wants to achieve. Because the worst thing that can happen is you have a great speaker, they get everyone excited, and then the next day, it doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
So I think those are the kinds of things that really do matter and make a big difference. I think it's the prep work that goes into it, and it's the allyship with whatever the mission is of the firm.
That's great. Those are great talking points, Deborah. So tell me this then, kind of bringing it to a coaching relationship. Let's say there's an attorney that wants to hire a coach to really help them get better at business development, get them better at marketing and all that. Or maybe it's somebody that's on the staff of a firm. What do you think can a coach do to help that lawyer really reach their full potential in terms of business development?
Well, there are different kinds of coaches for different things. There are great leadership coaches. My personal focus is on business development. So what I think is the most important thing is to define, again, the strategy and what that person wants to accomplish. And so you need to take into consideration what they want, whether that's to become a partner or if they're already a partner, to grow their practice. But I think really figuring out exactly what those things are so that the coach can help you really execute on what you need rather than just having a biweekly meeting with you that's an interesting meeting. So I think that having that up front is really key. But a coach can help you, you know, develop your business. So they can help you figure out who your targets are, how you're going to approach them. And then I think the last thing, but maybe the important thing is, besides those tactics that they'll help you with, and that can include, again, you know, targeting, figuring out how to ask for the business, helping you with your LinkedIn, there's an accountability portion of that it helps sometimes to be able to check in with someone, even if it's a once a month coach, to be able to say, okay, here's the homework you gave me, here are the three things, how did I do? You know, I think something happens. I always refer to that as the piano teacher principle, that many of us who took piano, myself included, you know, we wouldn't practice in advance because we were kids and we had all these other things to do, but we would practice 20 minutes right before the piano teacher got to the house. And so at least knowing that you have that accountability, you have that meeting set, I think people do kind of get their homework done when they know they have that person coming to the house.
Oh, absolutely. And I know just in my own life, I've hired coaches in certain things. My first thought is, I don't need anybody to hold me accountable. I'm a driver, I'm an achiever. And I know all the people listening to this feel the same way about themselves, but there's something magical that happens when you know I've got a conference call with my person here in 3 days, and I've got three action steps I need to take, and I don't want to look bad to my person that I paid money to. I want to get a return for that. So tell me this then. Give me a story of someone that you worked with, and you don't have to mention their name or firm name, of course, But what is it that they wanted to accomplish when you started working with that person? What did they actually do, and what was the result in terms of their business development increase?
Oh, sure. You know, I had a terrific young partner, very, very talented, who wanted to figure out how he could develop business. No one had ever taught him or showed him. He hadn't been on many pitches before. And if he had, it was kind of a last minute thing. But we were able to work on his personal brand to make sure that his LinkedIn profile was up to date, mm-hmm. that he knew which practice areas he was really trying to push. We worked on how he was going to differentiate himself. And then we worked on a network. And once we did that, then we worked on those questions like, how do you develop business? How do you ask for the business? And he was able to bring in millions of dollars to his firm. And so he was able to really get comfortable with the idea of pitching new business.
That's great.
Now, sometimes, you know, someone will just want to work on their positioning and how they're perceived in the marketplace. And so we do that too. But no, it's great to see someone achieve wonderful things like that.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's nice to know that you're making a difference in their lives. And so for our listeners, if we wanted to kind of summarize this and say, let's say there's three action steps they can take to really get started achieving results in business development, what would be those three action steps you'd want to share with them?
I would say there's a lot that you can do on your own that you don't need a coach for, quite frankly. Right. I think the first is to write a personal plan on a piece of paper. It should just be one side, you know, it should just be, I'm holding up my pad. It should just be one side, a simple plan, five steps that you're going to do, whether it's figuring out where your practice is and how you're going to go achieve it. I think the second thing you need to do is to really utilize your calendar. I find that's a great way, a great system to make sure that I'm following up with people. I make notes on my calendar of when to follow up with people. Mm-hmm. You can never follow up too much as far as really staying in touch with folks. And I think third, you know, have a system to connect and to comment on LinkedIn. I think LinkedIn is so powerful. All of the GCs that I speak with are on it. So I know that for the legal profession, it is.
Right.
You know, and so I would say, you know, those are three things: writing a plan, utilizing your calendar, and utilizing LinkedIn are three important things.
That's great, Deborah. I think that's really good advice. And I like the fact that it's simple. Everybody can do it. And when they hear you say that, they're like, oh, yes, I need to be doing that. thanks for the reminder. I'm going to do it today. So to everybody listening, do that today before you go to bed. Do those three things that Deborah talked about. And so, Deborah, I loved having you on the show. And I want our audience members to know, what are the services that you have? What would you like for them to know about you? And we'll definitely put those links on the show notes.
That's wonderful. Well, I work on three different levels, really, with firms. I work with firms as a whole. So that could be their training program or that could be their strategic plan. Since I'm a former CMO, I've done that a bazillion times. Practice plans I also work with. And then I also work with individuals. So very often I'll get a call. I only take about 10 coaching clients every year. I love it. It's one of the most rewarding things I do. But I'm delighted when I get the chance to coach people who are motivated and really want to make a difference.
Yeah, that is enjoyable. I'm sure that it is. That's great. Well, Deborah, thanks for being on the show. We're going to put the link to your book on the show notes. Also, we'll put your LinkedIn profile there as well. Thanks for being a great guest. We'll definitely have you back on our show here in the future.
Scott, thank you. It was wonderful to be here and to work with you on it.
Thank you, Deborah.
Thank you for listening to the Rainmaking Podcast. For more information about our recruiting services for international law firms, visit our website at attorneysearchgroup.com. To inquire about having Scott speak at your next convention, conference, sales meeting, or executive retreat, visit therainmakingpodcast.com.